Hello and welcome to a very, very special episode of Oncology for the Inquisitive Mind. Why is that, Josh?
It is our 100th episode. Nothing happened.
That's a real shame.
You want to try it again?
Nope.
Oh, you know why?
Well done, Michael. Well done.
Yes, so as we said in the last episode, we've got some new equipment and we're still figuring out some of the clips and quirks. But in case you're wondering, that was meant to be an applause for us for reaching 100 episodes.
Pat on the back, Michael.
Yeah, self-congratulatory stuff. So look, we are going to do something a little bit different today. There's not going to be any hazard ratios, or maybe not. I don't know what Josh has got planned. There's not going to be any, you know, side effect profiles or anything of that nature. We're going to do a bit more of a casual free flow episode, just a bit retrospective and talking about our journey up to this point.
Thus far,
because we have so much more in the future planned.
that's the idea.
So at risk of boring most of our listeners, Josh, we thought we would talk about how we got here. For no more than 5 minutes, I've got that written down in my notes
in
capital letters. So just speaking about how we actually came to do a podcast, because it's not something that everyone does.
True. Do you want me to kind of start?
Yeah, go for it. You've got such a good spiel with this.
I do. The year 2021, I think it was. The time, COVID. Michael was in Melbourne, I was in Sydney, we had a couple of mates, and we all ended up in the world of oncology training. And what we decided to do is do a weekly journal club, because, you know, all the cool kids do a nightly journal club on a Monday night at like 8:30 p.m. and we just kind of talked about hazard ratios.
Yeah, it's no longer Cheese TV or Nickelodeon that the cool kids do on an evening, it's journal clubs.
That and Disney Plus. And so we were doing this for probably about a year, in which case my wife went to us, why don't you turn this into a podcast? Because in Australia, journal clubs had fallen to the wayside. Education was essentially non-existent. And we were kind of navigating this brave new world of masks and gowns and, you know, unfortunately high death rates with COVID and trying to kind of finish our oncology training and specialize.
And it makes it really hard when you're just starting a completely new specialty to have all of these education opportunities basically completely switched off. Like even Josh talked about journal clubs and all that sort of stuff, but even things like intra-hospital radiology meetings and MDMs were closed for a while. Basically everything went on standby mode.
That's it. And I think someone once put to me, it's like, you know, when you're a junior doctor and then all of a sudden you become a registrar or a senior trainee, you know, or even a consultant, it switches from, you know, you not making any decisions about a certain specialty to being, you know, the preeminent force in that area. And it's such a weird perception. So it's like, you know, are you going to give this chemo your first week of training? You know, you're the first week as a specialist. Like, you might have done this in theory, but being able to make that decision is really difficult.
And it's quite a jarring change because it is literally over the course of an evening. Like, one night you are, or one afternoon you are the basic physician's trainee or the more junior trainee who's not specializing and is asking these questions. And then literally the next day you are the advanced trainee who is taking these questions and actually giving advice. So it's a hell of a switch. So we really needed help. Some might say we still do need help, but of a different nature. But we needed to find a way that worked for us to keep on top of oncology. We've said it so many times on this show, oncology never changes. Oncology is always changing.
Yeah, I was going to say, hi, Michael. The podcast would be relatively boring if it was the same.
It would have been done. We wouldn't have made it to 50 episodes, much less 100. But oncology is always changing. It's never static, I think was what I was going for there. And if you don't have a means to keep up, then you're going to be left behind very quickly. And so we had this journal club, of course, given COVID and given that Josh and one of our other friends, a former guest on the show, Andrew Jensen, was interstate at a fair distance away from Melbourne. It was all on Zoom and we would talk, we would go through cases and all of that sort of stuff. And then, as Josh mentioned, his wife, Taryn, who works in public relations, said, well, look, you've basically got the
makings,
the framework down pat. So why don't you just record and put it out there and maybe one person will listen to it?
Well, a lot of people listen to it. So thank you for tuning in. And don't forget to subscribe if you like what we do and rate us. And we've also got an email, regular email coming out. So please, please click that button on our website.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in later in the show. but it was interesting to start doing a podcast because while we could talk about oncology for days, and indeed we have, the
literal
days, the actual making of a podcast, you know, finding the right programs, finding the right equipment, actually finding time to sit down and talk about this, and then editing, dear God, the editing, it was very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Definitely a steep learning curve, but I have to say kind of a fun learning curve as well. It's a little bit sort of left of field of what we do every day, and being able to edit and sort of promote and sort of educate ourselves. And I think for me, and we'll talk about our personal story. Michael, has it been 5 minutes? Don't we have to switch?
Yeah, I think it's been about 5 minutes.
This is your timing, not mine. Okay, I will hold my tongue. But why don't we talk about our personal stories in oncology training? And Michael, I will interview you. Michael, thank you so much for being being on my show, Oncology for the Inquisitive Michael.
Wow.
Wow, wow. So Michael, tell me your story. Like, where did you grow up? What's your favorite color?
I really don't think anyone who's listening to this is at all interested in that, Josh. But what Josh is alluding to in his characteristic roundabout way is we are a couple of practical people in some ways, and we wanted to actually have some words of wisdom, I guess, for anyone who might be listening to this. They've committed to starting oncology training, but they're a bit nervous about those first few days. So I can remember very early on, you know, I'd moved back to Melbourne after a few years at a small peripheral town called Geelong, which is actually where Josh and I met, and he attached himself to me like a limpet.
Moved in with him when I was trying to renovate my place. And
yeah, that's a whole other can of worms that will be opened in many a therapy session. But I arrived at the hospital and it was very much that, right, here's the phone, here's the patients. You will get calls from general medicine, surgery, respiratory, and, you know, the team at the hospital where I started at were very aware that it was sort of my first time at this, that I was very much a deer in the headlights. But getting those calls of, we've got this patient, she's 53, she has been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer was the story, the patient that I very vividly remember. And you go there and you assess the patient and you sort of do your standard stuff without really knowing what you're looking for and what questions you need to ask. So, and the biggest piece of advice that I can give to people who might be a little bit unsure of where to start is ask questions and find a way of learning and picking things up from an oncology perspective that works for you. I would like to say that it would be the podcast that you're currently listening to, but it might not work that way for everyone. So the way that oncology works, the way that oncology treatment works, can be really esoteric until you actually see it in action. So knowing, we were talking about this just before, knowing the difference, for example, between FOLFIRINOX and FOLFOXIRI, you know, there are subtle differences, but you don't really know that until you've actually experienced prescribing those two chemotherapies. Knowing what is important to assess a patient's suitability for chemotherapy is something that you really only pick up when you start assessing patient suitability for chemotherapy. So get stuck in, but don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to make mistakes, because that's how you learn. Mm. And if you're at a place where you've got a mentor or several senior doctors who are willing to put themselves out and teach you and go through things, that's, for my money, the best way of picking this up and getting through those first few months, which are probably some of the hardest you'll ever have as a doctor.
I think so. And I think I took a slightly different journey to Michael, because I don't like to be outdone with making my life harder than it should be. So I got my job. It was in Sydney. I was based in the same small peripheral town as Michael. And I decided to leave as Melbourne, Victoria in Australia was locking down. So the army had been deployed. The border had been closed. I packed the boot of my Mazda 3 and I got stopped at the border because I had the wrong address on my driver's license.
Of course you did.
And so I drove 1,000 kilometers to a new apartment in a new city where I knew a handful of people, starting a job in a town, well, I guess not a town, in a suburb I didn't know, in the middle of nowhere.
In Australia's most populous city.
That's exactly it. And, you know, also quite an underfunded hospital as well. And so I rock up and, you know, there's 30 patients, inpatients on the ward, you're doing clinics, and it was chaos. And I think for me, I found the first 6 months were brutal. And I agree with Michael. I felt like I just wanted a protocol to follow, or someone to be like, this is your first step, this is the second step. But it all came down to, yes, asking questions and really latching on to people who were willing to give me the time to answer my small and simple questions. I think the story that kind of stuck out for me, and one that I kind of use in my practice, and Michael's probably looking at the time as I meander lots of stories from this guy. You know, a lady, she's in hospital, she's got really bad ovarian cancer, and there's this ongoing debate about giving more chemotherapy. And I was 3 months in and I'm like, what are we doing with this person? Why are we giving this treatment? And you know, it was back and forth. She had lots of other comorbidities, couldn't get out of bed, and we ended up giving her treatment. And 6 weeks later, she died. And take from that conversation what you will, but I think it really much solidified for me my practice and how I kind of try to straddle a line between quality of life but also quantity of life. And I think I agree with Michael. It's about asking questions, realizing you don't need to know all the answers. You know, no one does. That's why everyone streamlines these days and does a single subset of breast cancer, you know, HER2 positive, IHC3, you know, FISH positive with two lymph nodes only kind of thing.
Yes, and a PIK3 kinase mutation. No. Anyone else, forget it.
That's exactly it. And I think, you know, that would be my advice. Don't beat yourself up. Don't expect to know everything. You know, you're not. And even when you finish your training, Michael and I finished our training, you know, we still don't know everything. And I think it's about understanding that and kind of seeking out those mentors that will help guide you to a path and a life that you're happy with.
And one last story, because I think you touched on a very important point, and this doesn't just go for trainees, this goes for everyone who's in our specialty. It can be a really hard specialty, yep. Not just intellectually, but emotionally. You know, I mean, in medicine as a whole, you're going to experience tragedy and suffering and all of that. But oncology, you really do tend to see those heartbreak, you know, Hallmark movie kind of moments. And the really important thing is to take care of yourself. This is a lesson that both Josh and I have learned, but
multiple times
because we're thick-headed like that. But the one patient from my first year that I will never ever forget, and every oncologist and pretty much every specialist will have one of these, is a young lady with triple negative breast cancer who kept on presenting to us with headaches and reduced conscious state. She had MRIs, so many MRIs. She had lumbar punctures and nothing really definitively came up. And this is a lady with curable cancer who's young. Her primary had apparently improved, or had clinically improved from the treatment she'd already had. And eventually she started developing symptoms of intracranial hypertension, raised intracranial pressure. She blew one pupil and then the other in the space of an hour. And she went to a center with neurosurge capabilities, and she had leptomeningeal disease. And that was really hard for everyone involved. My consultant on the wards at the time was just as devastated as me. The resident was upset. The nurses were upset. And those cases in our line of work don't come along that infrequently. Mm-hmm. And if you start doing things like phase one studies and
which both of us have done,
you know, you're only going to see more of those what we call real heartbreak cases. Yeah. And you are absolutely no help to anyone, either in your personal or professional life, if you burn out emotionally, if you can't take it anymore. So make sure that you take care of yourself. Every trainee that ever works under me, I'm going to ask them, do you have a psychologist? Because, you know, you really should. Every oncologist should have a psychologist for my money. So make sure that you take care of yourself. Know that it is a hard job. It can be a hard job, but it is very rewarding for that.
That's true. Well, we might move on. Michael, I'm going to play this back to you in future, this little paragraph that you just told both of us.
Yeah, do as I say, not as I do.
That's it. And we're going to talk about highlights.
Yeah, because we've had a few of them.
And I think let's talk about favorite guests. I might go first.
Yeah.
I've had lots of favorite guests, and Michael, I don't know if you'd agree, I like to hound people to come on the show and be like, come, it's great.
Yeah, Josh is our PR officer on the show.
That's it. I think if I had to divide between international Australian, so I think for me, Eric Weiner, which was part of our sort of on the road series. I don't know why I got that wrong. he spoke about his life, and the background to that interview was a live interview, as I didn't realize until 10 minutes beforehand that I was actually doing this.
I actually looked at a bunch of photographs of myself with my family when I was a little kid, and I'm smiling in all of them. I mean, it's really quite dramatic. You know, I'm there with splints on my arms and in a wheelchair and this or that, and I'm just smiling away.
It's just so fascinating understanding that people's journeys do change. And I think what I took from that is, you know, your career and your life is what you make it. And we're so lucky we have so many opportunities. But also maybe, you know, it's sort of a double-edged sword that you have so many opportunities, you have to then eventually pick a path. You know, you've finished the train track, you're at the station, which path do you take? And I think for local, my favorite was Ash, because she's just lovely. She was our survivorship episode, and she's just, you know, charisma plus, and just really, really lovely to chat to.
A person is considered a cancer survivor from the point of diagnosis for the remainder of their life. So that includes anyone with a diagnosis, no matter what the stage, no matter what their age. And we've got 90 million cancer survivors by their definition in the world. And, you know, 2/3 of those would be living with long-term or living in the long-term with advanced cancer.
Both very good choices.
Thank
you, Josh. I think for me, again, if we're dividing it up between international and quote-unquote local, it might be a bit of recency bias, but I think Adam Brovsky, who was only on a couple of episodes ago, you talk about sort of charisma and enthusiasm. He brought that in spades, and not for nothing was his episode, you know, we like to keep these to sort of 30 minutes, so we're going to struggle with that today. But
I was wondering where we were up to.
He just went for almost an hour because he just had so much gold to say, and he's someone that we will, spoiler alert, be very much hoping to get back on the show.
It's really interesting. I was there kind of when, you know, Oncotype DX was developed. I helped them, you know, in the early days. And literally it came from the HIV business. You know, they had just figured out how to do RT-PCR to detect HIV levels. You know, this is how old this is.
In terms of local, I'm going to be a bit biased here, and I'm going to go back right to the start with our very first guest, who is Dr. Belinda Yeo, who basically agreed in a manner that is very typical of Belinda to give up some of her time to come on a no-name podcast, still sort of a no-name podcast, but at least people listen now and then, and give her wisdom again about breast cancer, but in a very knowledgeable way, who just had so much to say and so much practical advice as well, which is, yeah, it's very easy to get lost in the figures.
I think one thing about oncology, and this, I'm still learning this, is it's a pretty weird thing to do every day. And I think you've got to be pretty kind to yourself.
So if you haven't listened to those episodes already and you want somewhere to start, those are where we'd recommend.
That's it. There's over 100 to choose from, so go to town. Michael, let's move along because I don't know what the time is, but I think we've well and truly gone above it. What's your favourite trial in 30 seconds or less?
Favourite trial in 30 seconds or less? I mean, like you say, there's so many. I think I would have to say... Adora.
I knew it was going to be Adora. Like, I'm going to choose Adora, but no, I can't choose Adora.
Well, I mean, you can. We can have a consensus on what is our favorite study, but I think Adora, more for me, what it represents, like the hazard ratio, we've put it up the top there of our hazard ratio Hall of Fame, our Top Gear leaderboard. But I think that for what it represents is a real quantum shift in the way that not just lung cancer, but cancer as a whole is treated with a shift towards neoadjuvant and adjuvant treatment, early detection, targeted mutations. I think Adora really hits a lot of those points, aside from the fact that the hazard ratio was less than 0.3.
Yeah, I think I'm a bit sentimental. I think my favorite trial is actually, it's a lung one as well, is the KEYNOTE-189 trial.
An oldie but a goodie.
The question, this is the first trial I was ever handed, or the first paper I was ever handed as a registrar when I started, and I had no idea what I was looking at. I'm like, what is happening? And I think for me, you know, there's so many breast trials that I love as well, but this trial sort of represents the start of my personal journey in oncology. And it also represents, you know, the advances that we're seeing. It represents, like, we've got chemo, we've got immunotherapy, we're changing the paradigm and we're moving that needle forward, as everyone loves to say, in treating patients. And then I was practicing and there are patients who are 5 years out who are still alive. And, you know, lung cancer survival at 5 years is still not great, but it is better than when it's like, get your affairs in order. You've got 6 months because of chemotherapy. And I think for me, it holds a very special place in my heart.
I always knew you were a sentimental old softy.
I really am.
But as is our wont, we've been yammering on for over 21 minutes, Josh. There you go. There's the timestamp.
That's shorter
for
than
you.
I thought it would be. I don't have a timestamp in front of me. So I'm like, Michael's just going to go on his merry way.
Yes, I am. I'm the conductor of this particular train. But and watch as I completely send it off the rails. But finally, you know, we've been quite retrospective, we've been quite nostalgic in this episode, and so why don't we turn our gaze to the future, Josh? Do you want to talk about some of the things, some of the exciting things that we have planned?
I would love to. Thank you for throwing me in the deep end. So we've got, of course, classic more guests coming up. I don't want to give any of that away just yet, but we've got a pretty big lineup of people, both national and international, that we're going to have on the show to really talk about their research, kind of how the field is evolving. But more than that, the classic live broadcasts and major conferences. Michael and I love to kill each other watching essentially as much as we can while working almost full time to give it to you instead of bite-sized snacks.
But we also hope, Josh and I need to actually talk about the logistics of this, we also hope to actually bring you episodes direct from the horse's mouth, as it were, because we hope to actually attend a major oncology conference.
We're gonna be
this
going.
Year.
So look out for us. Say hello. You know, we'd love to meet you guys.
If you happen to be at ESMO at Madrid, we may as well just pull the curtain back entirely right now. If you happen to see us, say hello. We'll be the ones with branded T-shirts, probably.
That's it. I'm going to have a picture of Michael's face on my chest.
And I'm going to have one of those I'm with stupid T-shirts. But we hope to actually be able to bring you live reactions, I guess, almost from people that we've actually seen. And
it didn't work. Where's the clapping?
Oh, gosh. Josh doesn't realize that I've muted it. Oh, okay. Live reactions like that.
Yeah, like that. That's amazing. Okay. Woo, go Josh. Well, live reactions. And I think we've also got workshops in the pipeline and, of course, that newsletter that's coming out. So don't forget to subscribe at inquisitiveonk.com.
Nice.
InquisitiveOnc.com.
Nice. Josh remembers our website. But yeah, look, we've got a ton of stuff. We would like to start doing stuff beyond the podcast, and part of the reason that we are working part-time or ostensibly part-time now is that we'll have more time to devote to this. So with regards to the workshops, if you happen to be in Australia, we hope to be able to offer a day or two of fun and games from an oncology perspective. But who knows what the future will bring ultimately. So we've got plenty of ideas. This is just a taster. And so we hope that you will stay with us to experience all of this wonderful stuff that we've got planned. But I guess from the bottom of our hearts, we just wanted to say thank you so much to everyone who listens, who's recommended. I mean, it's still gobsmacking to me that people come up to us at work and say, you know, I've listened to your podcast, because a large part of me still wonders actually beyond our families who listens to this.
Our dads extensively, I believe.
Yes, exactly. But like, who else would? But it's the response that we've had has been absolutely outstanding, and just sort of really, really takes our breath away. So thank you so much to everyone who has wasted some time listening to us speak.
I think Michael really believes educated themselves in a fun and interesting manner. But before I go, Michael, I'm going to tell it. Michael's actually a singer. And while he's not going to sing today, if you guys send us an email and if we get enough of them, he might do a Les Miserables sort of rendition for us, because I've got a little recording on my phone somewhere. And I think we've got the nice microphones. Why not use it?
Josh has been keeping that video in a little folder called blackmail.
That's it. It's an extensive blackmail. Well, hope you guys enjoyed our little bantery episode, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
Next week, probably for more of the same.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Oncology for the Inquisitive Mind. This episode was produced by ADC Productions, with the assistance of education grants from Pfizer, Gilead Pharmaceuticals, and Merck Pharmaceuticals. However, we do not allow creative or editorial control, or even early previews of any content. They are hearing this episode alongside you for the very first time. If you like this episode, there's plenty more where that came from. Check out our website, inquisitiveonc.com, for all of our previous episodes, and make sure to subscribe to be the first to hear new content. If you'd like a particular topic covered on the show, or just want to chat, drop us a line on Twitter @inquisitiveonc, or by email on inquisitiveonc@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.